Hey, welcome to Code Gray. I'm Nicole. So this is a podcast where we dive into Grey's Anatomy's episodes. We explore the stories that are happening in the episode and we connect it to real life situations. So today we're going to be talking about season 3, episode 3. And just a heads up, all these episodes, all the podcast episodes go in random order, talking about random cases, random scenarios, and there will be spoilers on each of them. I try to primarily focus on the medical side of the episodes instead of the personal side, but if you haven't seen the episode, you probably shouldn't listen to the podcast, okay? So, season 3, episode 3 was titled Sometimes a Fantasy. So in this episode, Izzy is getting ready to return to the hospital, but she doesn't quite go in. Addison and Mark are having their own little situation, and George is irritated with Callie from her living in like a shared space. Okay. So in this episode, there are three different medical things that are going on. One of the medical situations involves a foster kid who thinks she's invisible. She thinks she's a superhero. There's a dad that's having seizures, and there's an athlete that doesn't need replacement surgery. So this episode, we're going to focus on those three medical mysteries, medical situations, and real life people that might have experienced something similar. Okay. So, first things first. So, the episode starts off with this foster kid. It's her fourth visit to the hospital, and Alex immediately thinks, well, everyone thinks that she's being abused by her foster parents because there's a pattern of her coming in. The foster parents are very nice. The kid is very nonchalant. The kid is like, these are the best foster parents I've ever had. Please don't call CPS type situation. So, Alex is talking to the kid, and he's, patching up her leg or something, I think, and he knows that she has a scar on her arm. So the scar on her arm has staples in it, and he is just Alex being Alex, which I've always loved how he loves kids. He's like angry and he's like, who stapled your arm? This is insane. He was like, I'm gonna numb this area for it because I gotta fix it the right way. And she's like, if you could just hurry up, like you're costing my parents money, and these are the best parents I've ever had. Like, let's speed this along. So while he's preparing to fix her arm, she starts biting out the staples directly out of her arm. She tells him that she put the staples in there. She was pulling them out first, and the last one was stuck. So then she bit into her arm to take it out. And he's like, wow, kid, like you don't feel any of that? And she's like, no, it's fine. Like, just fix what you came to fix. Do your job. And he's confused and he's trying to talk to her and engage with her. And she finally just says, okay. I'm gonna tell you my secret. Lean in. I'm a superhero. Wow, what? And he's like, he's not into superheroes. So she's like, I'm a superhero. I don't really feel pain. So she starts to tell him a story about how people don't believe her, that this one kid had he punched her in the stomach 25 times and one time with a baseball bat. And that's how she knows it's a superhero, you know? So he goes back and reports this. So then they give her like a full body scan and he found all this damage. You know, she's bleeding internally and she doesn't feel any of it. So he goes back and tells Robbins, and Robbins is like, okay, Robbins is cool, kid advocate. She's like, if that's what she thinks, go ahead and test her, you know, do the cold water pressure test, right? So in the episode, the little kid and Alex both put their hands in a bowl of cold water, and he says to her, "Pull it out when it starts to hurt." So they're talking during this little test, and the kid goes on to tell him, "You know, think about it. You know, all superheroes don't have parents. They have a messed up childhood. They do this, they do that." And Alex is listening to her, but his hand starts to hurt, so he immediately pulls it out of the water. He was like, your hand doesn't hurt. And he pulls her hand out the water. And she's like, I'm telling you, dude, like, I'm a superhero. You're just weak. So that condition that she had was called a congenital insensitivity to pain. That's what it's called. And this happens with kids and adults. And typically it's caught when kids are young, but because she's in foster care and because she's been moved around a lot, it wasn't caught at an early age. So I looked that up and I found a story from BBC of this person named Stephen Pete and his brother. They're from Washington, and both of them suffer from it. So they have healthy, loving parents, and they noticed that the boys were suffering when they're about 4 or 5 months old. So the parents took them to the doctor because the boys were teething and they were literally chewing on their tongues, and the parents didn't know what to do with that. They took it to the doctor. So the doctor starts to give them tests, just like in the episode. So they didn't start with ice water because obviously they're babies and they're not going to be able to talk when it starts to hurt, right? So what they started with, they used a lighter under Steven's foot, and they just went back and forth with the lighter until his foot blistered and the baby didn't respond to any of it. Okay. So then after that, they started doing needles in his back. They did needles up and down his spine to see if he was going to respond to any of that penetration, and he didn't. So they did a bunch of different tests with him, and they decided that he had this insensitivity to pain. This is when he was a baby. So his parents were aware of this. They're constantly checking for it as the kids grow up. But these are two boys, you know, they're rambunctious and they play a lot. So they're still getting hurt at school and out of the parents' sight. So when they were, this is stories told by Stephen. So when he was about 5 or 6, he said protective custody came and took him away. Now, when the parents were investigated by the protective custody, they said, "Hey, you know, my kid has this condition. I know he keeps getting hurt. You know, we can't avoid it. He doesn't feel pain. Here's our pediatrician." The pediatrician agreed. Cops didn't care. They took him anyway. Okay. So he was gone from his parents for about 2 months. So while he was with these, you know, foster protective custody people, he broke his leg. So when they saw that he broke his leg and he really didn't feel pain, and he, you know, there was nothing they could have done to prevent him from breaking his leg, they let him have his parents back. So they took him back to his parents. They believed the doctor and they returned him home. So Stephen goes on in this article to talk about how he suffered and like different injuries that he's had and all these different things. But I'm curious, like, what happened to his brother? So somewhere in the article, he says that his brother took his own life, and he thinks it's because of this condition. He said that life is really hard to manage and to handle when you are constantly worried about getting hurt and not really knowing if you're hurt. Now, Stephen is an adult and he also has a child. And as an adult, he has dealt with, he's broken his leg and his knee so many times that the doctors basically said that when it comes impossible for you to walk on it, we're just going to have to amputate your leg. Like, there's no way to save it. You've had too many surgeries. There's nothing we can do. He said there was one time that he actually broke his foot and some toes and he didn't even realize it. He said that he just noticed one day that it was black and blue. And he went to the doctor and they said, they x-rayed him and they said, "Hey, you know, you have a broken foot. We're gonna have to put you in a cast." He said, "I can't work in the cast. They're gonna, you know, send me home." So he went home, he duct taped his foot, put his foot in the boot, went to work, and then when he had a chance, he came back to get it fixed. So he says it is hard. It's hard to live with this condition, and it's genetic, and he has a son, so his son has the same condition as him. And they noticed it when he was a baby because he has a history of it. And again, when his son started to get sick and get injured and do the whole chewing on your tongue thing, they accused him and his parents of abusing the son. But because of documents and because of his history and because of all those things, his son never got taken away from him. But he's concerned about it. He said him and his wife, they're diligent about watching him and making sure that he has less injuries. But again, he's a boy and he's going to be a kid, and you know, he doesn't know where it's going to go. Stephen also mentioned that when he was younger, he volunteered at a hospital. And at the hospital, he ran into these two kids from Pakistan, and they brought the kids over to the States for help, for medical attention. And they had broken so many bones. They had blisters and, like, literally set their hands on fire, would jump from the second floor of the house, and they'd have all these injuries. And the parents were devastated. So the parents are first cousins. So in their country, they thought that they had this condition due to, you know, just like the mixing of their blood and their genes being not like too diluted, I guess. But when he got over to the States, it was like, oh yeah, this condition happens when this isn't the case, when you're not marrying your family members. And this is a real thing. And the kids have to learn how to be more vigilant. So Stephen says when he knew the kids, They were 6 and 7. And I think he left them when they were 8 or 9, he says. And he always wonders what happened to them because in his history, the people he come across, they don't live very long lives. And those particular kids were being so reckless and their parents couldn't control them and their parents couldn't, advise them to be safe. He just wondered how long their lives would have gone. So in that same article from BBC, there was a lady who signed in and she said that she suffers from a condition that's the exact opposite of that. She feels everything. Everything is painful for her, everything hurts. And she had to advocate for herself when it went to the doctor to tell them, hey, everything's in pain. She was lucky to find a neurologist who supported her. That condition, you're going to have to forgive my pronunciation, but it's called fibromyalgia. And Raynaud's and Everettering, I don't know, some other really long word. Like 16 letters. I'll put it in the comments. But she says everything hurts and she's in the wheelchair most days because it hurts. And that actually reminds me of the condition from Mr. Glass. If you've ever seen, if you're in the comic books, DC, Marvel, there's a Mr. Glass villain who bones break really easily, right? And he's in a wheelchair. So that's what that condition reminded me of, Mr. Glass. And I'm sure there's real people like that. All right. So I also read on the NIH, the National Institution of Health website, that most people with this condition don't live, like their average age is 25. Because they have to constantly get checked, they have to constantly go to the doctor, and sometimes they're kind of considered like accidental suicides because they're not intentionally trying to harm themselves, they're not intentionally trying to bleed out, but sometimes they'll bleed out in their sleep, or they'll have a little cut that just, gets infected or whatever the case may be. They'll die young because they're hurt and they don't know to get it treated. So Stephen says that whenever he gets a slight fever or his temperature is irregular, he'll know to go get checked just to see if anything's wrong with him because he doesn't know. He doesn't feel it. He doesn't have any pain. I also found, because of that whole 25-year-old thing, I wanted to Google to see how old someone is with this condition. And I found a 71-year-old woman in Scotland. Now, that article was in Life Science and was published in 2019. And she suffers from this condition. But she didn't know it until her adulthood, it seemed like. She went in for a checkup and they told her that she had arthritis in her hip and she had to have hip surgery and she had to get it replaced. But she had no idea that she even had arthritis, but it was so degraded that she had to get her hip replaced. And she had like one other medical condition, but I didn't write that in my notes. All right. So, first scenario was the kid who suffered from congenital insensitivity to pain. Another situation in that episode was a dad who was having seizures and they wanted to chop his brain in half in order to reduce or minimize the seizures altogether. So that one, in that storyline, there's this beautiful family who have a newborn baby. And the wife is concerned because the husband has so many seizures, she's not leaving him alone. And the dad's like, and the wife doesn't want to have the surgery because she's so concerned about it. And like I mentioned earlier, Christina is taking care of Bert. And she's like, the caretaker really suffers in pain. And Christina's telling the wife how hard it's going to be to take care of him. So the wife is like, she's not even scared. She's scared of the surgery, but she's scared about the aftermath of surgery as well. Is he going to be different? Like you're letting someone poke around in your brain. She thought her husband was being, to me, it came off like he was being dramatic. Like he was, not really taking it seriously. And he's like, well, honey, you want me to have the surgery because you won't leave me alone with our son. Like, you won't let me hold him. You won't let me do all these different things. And I want to be his dad and I want to be around for it. Right. All right. So, this procedure in the episode, I don't feel like I got as much information, but when I researched it, I got a lot more information. So, according to Cleveland Clinic, this corpus callosotomy. That might be right, but that's what I have in my paper. This surgery considers when you have it splits your brain, so you have a right side and left side of your brain, and you have these little fibers that connects the two, and that part is called the corpus callosum. And It's a band of fibers, and basically the surgery goes in and they cut those fibers that connects the two halves of the brain. It's not doing anything to your actual brain. It just cuts the little connective tissues. And the point of that is that it's supposed to stop when a seizure starts to happen on one side of the brain, it stops it from going to the other side. So then it reduces you having seizures at all. That's my interpretation without having a medical background based on what I've read. It says that this procedure has 1 in 5, that have this procedure, they're seizure free for the next 10 years, right? I don't know if they come back in 10 years or they're seizure free forever, but Cleveland Clinic says that it can help people never have seizures again, right? So this dad wants to have this procedure so that he could have his son. In the episode, they actually show him having a seizure. He's holding his son, and I guess he can feel it coming on. And he's like, "Wife, wife, wife, get the baby, get the baby, and get the baby." And then when he screamed it the last time, he starts to fall off the bed, the baby starts to fall, and Christina catches the baby. I paint the picture for you. So this condition, I saw that it was rare, but it's not uncommon because lots of people have seizures for different medical reasons. They could have epilepsy or something else going on. They could have like a stroke condition. It just kind of depends. But for this particular procedure, you go in, you cut the brain apart, and then it's supposed to help solve your things, right? So I saw online, didn't have a reference for it. The first person to ever have the surgery was a World War II vet. He suffered from blackouts after an injury, and this was in 1962. So he would black out, which I'm assuming was seizures back then, but he'd black out and then he'd come to later on, and that's pretty dangerous, right? So they had the procedure for on him. They cut his fibers, his little brain fibers, and it reduced him from having any seizures. On another website, the Hale New Haven website, I read about a 17-year-old girl named Eileen who was born without those microfibers at all. So when she was a kid, her mom took her to the doctor because she noticed her hand was like shaking, like her hand was seizing by itself. They took her to the doctor, they gave her a brain scan, and she's a toddler at this age. And they discovered that she didn't have anything connecting her left brain to her right brain, right? So as she got older, it caused her to have like a speech delay. So she would struggle with speaking, and she had to go to a speech therapist. It just helped her formulate words and catch up with all the other kids around her, and she overcame it. She overcame the delay. People didn't even know that she had this issue with her brain. And as she got older, her doctors changed. So her senior year, she's planning to apply for colleges and make a plan to be a fashion merchandise major and all these things, right? She gets a new neurologist, and that doctor's like, "Hey, I think we should scan her brain again. It's been a long time since we did a brain scan. We should scan it again and see what's going on." So he does the new brain scan. Oh, by the way, that condition, discovered as how is really rare, but it's not unique. In my research from the Yale New Haven website, I saw that 7 in every 1,000 are born with this condition. That's it. All right. So she had a new scan her senior year, and they found a tumor. So the tumor that they found, it was located on the right side of her brain in the supplementary motor area. That's called SMA, supplementary motor area. So typically, when someone has this condition, they just remove it. And then because their left and right brain are connected, the stronger brain that didn't have the issue, sorry. The stronger brain that didn't have the issue just rewires your brain on the other side to replace whatever you're missing from that brain. But she didn't have that little connection thing. So they were concerned that if they cut that out, that that side of the brain would impede that side of whatever side of the body that affects and her speech and all these things. And they just didn't know how she would recover. So they started giving her a bunch of tests to see. There was no documented test before her that showed someone that was born without their corpus callosum that also had to get their SMA removed. So they kept doing it, kept doing the research, but then it got to the point where the doctor was like, "I mean, this is all theory. We can make assumptions, but we're not going to know until we do it. And if we don't have the surgery, she's going to die from this tumor. It's just going to grow out of control and she's going to die." So the mom was like, "Bet, Let's do it. So they do the surgery and they tell the family and the parents, just a heads up, she's gonna have some speech delay. She's not gonna be able to use the left side of her body for a while. We're gonna take her to therapy, like just prepare them for the worst case scenario, right? So she comes out of surgery and she wakes up 8 hours later. And when she wakes up, she's already talking. The doctor didn't expect that. So she's already talking. Now she's not talking like a 17, 18-year-old kid who's in high school. She's talking more like a toddler, they say. So she's having short sentences. She's drawing words. She's saying how she missed Harry Styles, what they thought was a funny thing for her to say. But she's communicating, right? A couple of weeks go by and she can like move her hands. She's still in a wheelchair, but she's like moving, both her hands. Her speech is starting to improve. They're continuing to do brain scans on her. And they found that because her brain had to already learn how to do that speech delay, that her brain would sometimes be on and off. Got into a lot of medical jargon I didn't quite understand, but basically her brain was already strong enough to replace whatever was removed from her brain because it was used to working double time already, right? So she eventually was able to recover. When she came out of rehab, she claimed that she was going to run a marathon that following year and that she knew that she was going to recover from this. And she did go off to go to college. I don't know if she did run the marathon. It didn't say in that particular article, but it turned out that it was good. Now, what I took from this article on the non-medical side is that you're born with everything you need to survive, right? So she was born with that condition where she didn't have that little thing, but later on, when she got that tumor, her brain had already been prepared to repair whatever deficiencies her brain surgery was gonna have, and she still survived and made the most of it. So I personally love that story. Okay, so last condition, the last scenario in that episode was the serious athlete. There's a serious athlete who wanted to have a knee transplant. Yeah, he wanted to have a knee transplant. So on this episode, it was Callie and it was George. And Callie had been working with this man for years. She's done multiple surgeries over the last X many of years. And he's a serious athlete, not a professional athlete, but a serious athlete. He runs marathons, triathlons, he climbs mountains, he does bicycling, he does all the things. And because he's so heavy on intensity on his body, sometimes he messes up some, ligaments or bones or whatever. So he comes in this day for a knee replacement. So what I got from the episode, he came in for the knee replacement, and basically, he had been waiting for someone to come in that would match his knee. Okay. I've never had any bones broken. I've never had anything replaced. So I'm not really sure how that works, but that's what happened, right? So he comes in for the knee replacement and Callie's excited. She's stoked. She's excited to do this surgery for him. And George is not so excited. He's like, I'm confused. Why do you need a re knee replacement? Like your knee is good. He's like, yeah, but this one's gonna go out on me. And he's listing all the things he's done, all the body parts he's replaced. And he's excited about it. Callie's excited about it. He's like, I'm a serious athlete, And the guy asks Callie, can I meet my guy? Can I meet the donor who's giving me this knee? And she's like, that's not something that we do, right? So George, he doesn't support the surgery. So he's like, you know what? I'm gonna let you meet the guy. So he takes him down to the morgue and he lets him meet the guy, right? And he pulls this guy out in the tray, and the guy has like gray hair and he's a little older. And well, he's not even older. He appears to be older. So the guy who's getting the surgery, he's like, man, they're gonna put this old guy's knee inside of me? What were they thinking? And O'Malley's like, he's actually 2 years younger than you, And he's talking to the guy, and eventually the guy's like, you know what? I don't wanna get this knee. So that caused a whole upstir with Callie and George. We're not gonna get into it. You should watch the episode. But I Googled it. I Googled it because I was curious. What other, extreme athletes are there that do these quote unquote elective surgeries to make their game better, their sports better? So I Googled it over a series of a bunch of days. And honestly, I lost some of my research. I'm just gonna be honest. I lost some of it. I saw a list of random things and I couldn't go back to it. I couldn't find where that was, but I did find some athletes that have done breast reduction surgery to improve their game. Okay. So there was an article that was published recently, ABC News, where a woman is in the news for having a breast reduction surgery. Okay. Now, this particular woman, she is a professional tennis player. She's 21. She had to get breast reduction surgery because it improved her game. She was a 34 double D and she got a reduce to a 34 C. So she was originally a world ranked tennis player at 450. Like that was her ranking in the world. She was the 450th best player in the entire globe, right? After the surgery, she skyrocketed to the number 18th person in the entire world. Crazy, right? So she says that having her large breasts, she sometimes had to wear double sports bras, and other athletes have contested the same thing. They were double sports bras to keep them bounded while she's playing, and it slowed her down, her breathing. She said it was giving her back pain. It wasn't helping her intense, like, enhance her game, so she had a breast reduction. Some other athletes have criticized her for having the reduction. They say that it gives her an unnormal like advantage over other people. And some people criticize her because they say that there's an athlete, a volleyball player in South Africa who's really, really popular, really famous. She's also a professional volleyball athlete. She has a 34 double D. And she says that the message that this other athlete is sending, the tennis player, she says that well-endowed women can't play sports just the way they are, and that that's just wrong. So I'm gonna restate that because I feel like I read my notes incorrectly. So the person in South Africa said that this other woman, this 21-year-old woman, she says that by her having this reduction, she's telling the world that, if you're heavy chested or if you're well endowed in your chest, that you can't compete on the same level as everybody else. And she doesn't like that. She has the same breast size as the original woman had, and she's never had a reduction. It has not impeded her sports. She does wear two bras at sometimes, but she thinks the solution should be maybe getting a better bra, maybe enhancing it that way, or training in a different kind of manner. You shouldn't have to change yourself physically through surgery in order to be a better athlete. So I think that's controversial. I think that you could, I mean, I think you could see both sides. If she's not comfortable with her double D's and she wants a C cup, then she should be entitled to wear that size. But at the same time, I don't think other people who have double D's or larger breasts should be prohibited or restricted or feel like they don't have as much opportunity and space as the people who have smaller breasted people. So there was actually a 19-year-old collegiate who plays softball professionally. She also had a breast reduction. They didn't say what her stats were, but the list kind of went on and on and on. So these are three sports: tennis players, softball players, and volleyball players. And that also reminds me that as women, sometimes we have to deal with things a lot of times. A lot of times we're dealing with things that men just don't have to think about. Men don't have to think about their chest size. They don't have to think about their penis size. They don't have to think about how that's impeding their athleticism or their life. So just another shout out to women and how strong we are. When I was Googling, I did come across a man, a baseball player, Jimmy Gamet, who wore a golden thong to improve his game. He said he played better with his golden thong, so he has a golden thong, so that helps him. I didn't find any other like extreme athletes where they had surgery and it automatically improved their game. I did see who else had knee surgery, replacement surgery, only because that was the exact case that was in the episode. So some people that had knee replacement surgery would include Tiger Woods, Al Roker, Tom Smith, Gabrielle Reese, she's a volleyball player. Oprah Winfrey has had knee replacement surgery. And a bunch of other people. There's a tennis player named Novak de something, Djokovic. I'm not really sure how to say his last name. It's Djokovic. Okay. So that's what I got from you. I also saw from this Connects website, American Society of Plastic Surgeons, that some professional teams have plastic surgeons at every game. They say they give a different perspective than a typical doctor or sports medicine person because they know what's happening behind the muscle, behind the tissues, and what type of advantages or disadvantages they might have from replacing things. So I thought that that was interesting. This particular article was focusing on Florida Panthers, which is an ice hockey team, and they have a plastic surgeon at every single game. I personally have never been to an ice hockey game, so I found that interesting. When I think of ice hockey now, I think about the person that was that was accidentally killed at the game, and it was so traumatic for me, and I only saw it on the video. So that's what I got. All right, so let's recap real quick. So this episode focused on season three, episode three. The episode was called Sometimes a Fantasy. We focus on three different conditions. We focus on congenital insensitivity to pain. We focus on extreme athletes and elective surgery, as well as corpus callosotomy surgery of the brain. So that's all I got for you today. So before we wrap up, I wanted to do a conversation starter, just do a wrap-up question. So I'm curious if you could have any superpower, because the girl in the episode who didn't feel pain, she kind of felt like she was a superhero. And honestly, I feel like the teen I told you about who was born without that part of her little brain, and how her brain came over to overcome her deficiencies, it's kind of super to me. So I want to know, what would your superpower be? If you could have any superpower in the world, what would it be? I would love for you to comment on this, or hashtag Code Gray, and write a response. Maybe comment on the post on Instagram or on YouTube or wherever you find your podcast. And I'm going to share with you what mine would be. So I've always had the same answer when it came to, if I had any superpower, what would it be? So my superpower would be able to understand and communicate in every language. So that means I could talk to anyone in any dialect, any tone, any language. That means I could communicate with the plants. I love plants personally. I can communicate with the animals. I can communicate with nature. I could just communicate with everyone. Like, the superpower to communicate and having positive communication, I think, it would be a game changer, not only for me, but for everyone else. And what's funny about that is I've always said that since I was a little girl, that I'd want to have superpower and be able to communicate with everyone. And as an adult, I'm an engineer, so I'm writing in a bunch of different languages and code. So I kind of feel like a mini superhero myself. You know, I can write in Java and React and Python and TypeScript and just all these different languages. And I feel like I'm living my little girl's dream in reality. So that's what I got. So, thank you so much for listening. I hope that these podcasts will get better in time, but I'm just getting started. So, I want to leave you with this. Take care of your heart, take care of your mind, and take care of what matters most. Have a great day. I hope you enjoy the MAC podcast. Bye.